chains down. Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Wednesday. It is the last night of our broadcast week, of course. And our guest again this evening is Alan Watt. Alan?
Yeah?
Thanks for being here tonight.
It's a pleasure.
Let me do this, and then as you know, I was just a little bit behind tonight when you called.
Uh-huh.
What I would like to do, first of all, from Matthew 25, Jesus said, "For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me." I like that. That's pretty. That's so real, isn't it, Alan?
It is, yeah, and there's no money involved.
Well, I know, but what I mean is that it is true.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That what we do to one or for one, it's to one, to all or for all.
That's right.
I guess that's what I mean.
Humanity, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. What I would appreciate if you would do is, I know we talked about it last night, but let our listeners know again this evening. Oh, folks, today, I'm sorry, today is Wednesday. It is the 27th of April. It's the 27th of April in the year 2005. It is Wednesday, as I said. Maybe I gave the date. I don't think I did. Today is Chuck's birthday, his birthday in this third-dimensional world. And I just wanted to remember him to you folks. Alan, if you will, tell our listeners about the book and how they can get the book and how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah.
So that I can be away from the mic for a few minutes.
Okay.
And be sure and give us your correct phone number, okay?
I will do.
Okay, thank you. Folks, I'll be right back. Alan is with you now.
Yes. Yeah, there's two books and a third one coming out. They're $25 each, payable in U.S. International Postal Order from your post office. And the address to write is Alan Watt, W-A-T-T. That's Site 41. That's S-I-T-E 41. Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada. And the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1, P3E4N1. And my telephone number is 705-695-0416. As I said, there's a third one in the process right now, and it should be ready in about a week. They go through Freemasonry, the banking system of ancient times up to the present. How countries were taken over, empires built up and then destroyed as the money powers moved on. And I also go into how these bankers created the world's religions and helped it to dominate the peoples they took over in foreign countries by imposing these religions, installing priesthoods, generally from the Middle East, and setting up churches in each country, which also served as a branch of their banking system. And so the gold that was lent to these countries ended up underneath these churches for so-called safekeeping. So it's an interesting read, each one of them. And the secret society that was on the go 5,000 years BC is still on the go today, and that's why nothing really changes. It's the same system of debt creation, which gives power to private bankers over the countries, and obviously then it gives the bankers the right to dictate policies of those countries, just like Alan Greenspan does. And in Canada, we have a Bank of Canada, which is not a Canadian bank. It's actually a board of men who are picked by the international bankers who liaise with the Canadian government. So the pool does trick in every country, and really only 12 families or so are the international families which lend to every country, and technically they lend nothing, but they want repayment in real goods or gold, and that's how it is up until the present system.
And they never print enough money to pay the usury that's charged.
That's correct, and they must always keep a country in debt. And even in ancient times, when they would take over a country by force, often because they employed armies of countries they'd already conquered, they would install a tyrant, what they called a tyrant or dictator. And he was well paid for his function, and he would immediately start massive public works and projects and build mausoleums and so on. And of course, this was borrowed from the bankers and created the debt system, and which was based also on compound interest, meaning you could never get away from the debt, you couldn't pay it off. So the bankers ended up having complete control over the country through the front man, who was the tyrant or dictator. Later on, of course, they gave us democracy, so you have a bunch of tyrants basically fronting for the bankers, and it's all the same system. They're all Masons of high degree, pre-picked before the public even see them up for election, and they've vowed complete obedience to the organization they serve, which is not the people, you see. But it's an ancient system. It's well documented in some books, in fact, and even many of the ancient Greeks especially wrote about these bankers and how they operated and how they had been taking over the countries 2000 years BC by the same techniques.
And they wrote about it in Genesis.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why they put Genesis together, the Gene of Isis, because it contains their mystery religion. And of course, religion dominates the mind. That's what its function is. It was meant to do. It limits your scope of thinking.
I received a call from a listener last night.
Uh-huh.
And he is a longtime listener, but he was really thrilled to hear you mention, you know, the CIA behind many of the shortwave and alternative broadcasts. But he said that, he said, to be honest with you, I had quit listening for a while when you had Alan on, and he said that Jesus was the same as Jupiter, and I said, no, he didn't, and he was convinced, and I said, no, you misunderstood what he told us, and I looked it up. Of course, I didn't carry this on in the conversation, but
yeah.
It's, you can find it, I mean, you can search and find it in so many places, that Jehovah, Jupiter, Jove are all one and the same.
That's right. Rudyard Kipling even wrote a little poem on it.
Did he?
Yeah, and it ended with Jehovah, Jupiter, Jove by George.
Wow.
That's how it ended.
Uh-huh.
So he was a high Mason too, so they all know. So of course, It's a mystery religion. It's been around for thousands and thousands of years, and they've controlled all other established religions. It certainly took them over from the beginning, and you can see even in the New Testament where you have obviously a person who was doing extraordinary things, such as kicking bankers out of the temple, standing up to the priesthood of his day, and decrying them for what they were, which was again was front men for other powers. So you can see there was a real person there. Where it comes to the addition of the old mystery religion, which Rome put on it, you can see the 12 disciples and Jesus as the Son. So they added on the old mystery religion on top of the real character, you might say.
The real individual, the real person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, you go right ahead, Alan.
Yeah, so it's easy to discern a real person and what a real person is doing, as opposed to the standard sun and the 12 disciples, or the sun and the 12 signs of the zodiac, which had preceded the idea for thousands of years. In the Egyptian times, it was 10 signs of the zodiac, and they changed two of the signs. One was a hippo, and one was an alligator. Although the hippo was more important to the sign at the time.
Why, what did it mean?
It's the only animal which can fart through its mouth.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Now, Alan.
It's a fact.
Is that a joke?
It's true.
Oh.
It's true. It's a pretty formidable animal, yeah. And you don't want to face it anyway.
Well, wouldn't we call that a burp?
Not really, no. This literally was from the other end. It came right through its mouth.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
But that's why it was so important?
Well, it was because it could also swim underwater and on land. And, of course, they liked the symbol of the Nile bringing the life to the area and onto the land. And so the hippo could signify that or symbolize that. They could swim in the water and come onto the land.
One of the thoughts that I have had, you know, you have shown us how they have used the astrological wheel, all of that is part of their mystery, quote, religion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Alan, they don't do that for fun.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is, well, and I don't know, you may not agree with this, and that's okay, but I find that there, for example, if an individual has an astrological chart drawn up,
mm-hmm.
the person who draws up the chart, the astrologer, if it's a good one, doesn't have to know anything about the individual,
mm-hmm.
and the, like a natal chart. And of course, it doesn't mean that your life is mapped out, but it seems to me that there is relevance in understanding the energy from the different planets and how they play upon us at certain times,
mm-hmm.
and it's just too accurate in too many ways for too many people for there not to be some merit to it. But maybe that's why in the Old Testament they tell you not to go to astrologers. Because, you know, Christians think that it's, you know, sinful and et cetera, et cetera. But I would like your comments on that. I mean, why, for example, the number 13.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about this, and of course they gave us, you know, Jesus and his 12 disciples. Were there 12 disciples? I don't know, but I thought to myself, in fact, I said it at one time I was talking to a group and somebody was talking about the number 13. And I said, well, you know, the energy, the color, each color has its own, would we call it a vibration or a frequency? And the tune, the musical tones, the notes, everything really is quite beautiful, the way everything kind of meshes and joins together. But I thought, well, maybe there's something about the number 13, the energy of it, that is powerful. So we're told that it's an unlucky number, and they won't put a 13th floor on a building, mm-hmm. and et cetera, et cetera. Jesus, what was it, his 33rd year? Did he begin, or was he crucified?
He crucified.
Okay, so, you know, they use these numbers, mm-hmm. and they use the astrological signs and dates, and I wonder if that has to do with what they call their windows of opportunity.
They definitely use the solar chart as a timetable, because it's a clock. And it's a clock which deals in hundreds and thousands of years. And their plans are ancient. As they say themselves, the plan came down or came to them around 4,500 B.C. That's when the plan to take the entire planet over and how it would be done was supposedly drawn up. Dates on Masonic temples. The date it was built in modern numbers and time. And they have the other one with AL on it, Anno Lucifer, the fall of Lucifer.
Oh, wow. The fall.
So they have that date plus the 4,500 years tacked onto it.
But didn't you say this plan is much older than even that?
I believe so. In fact, I think that plan is only one phase.
Okay.
Of the much older plan.
In other words, maybe it was the tweaking. Maybe they tweaked it.
Or revised it.
It was like that Rabbi Reichhorn said at some funeral. This is, you know, a quote, allegedly. I wasn't there, so I can't say for a fact, but what he said in this, it was at a eulogy, I believe, a friend's funeral, but he said we get together every 100 years to take a look at where we are and to plan out the next 100. Mm-hmm. And you know, Alan, I thought, my goodness, because, you know, when you read the protocols and you see how everything is falling right in place,
mm-hmm.
Right according to the way they laid it out, and then you think, well, that was 100 years ago, but we know that they say in the protocols it is said this plan that we have had underway for 2025, whatever, 100 years. Well, it makes sense that every 100 years or so.
Well, it's no different from any corporation. They literally plan ahead 100 years.
Oh boy, did they plan!
You know. And even the World Council of Churches plans ahead in 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, David Rockefeller started that up.
But getting back, you know, to the astrological thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if they are the keepers of the truth, of the mysteries, and it is so important to them, I guess what I am saying is that it makes some sense to me that there is something to it, and they don't want people to know.
It's not that at all, actually.
What is it?
They wanted people to believe exactly what you've said, that there's strange powers and so on, and that's the exoteric, but they kept the esoteric meanings to themselves. And Pythagoras, of course, was the first one to write about this in the Greek language.
Write about what, Alan?
This particular, that you're talking about colors, tones, astrological signs, and so on. In fact, the name tone comes from Pythagoras, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the tone of a color, the tone of a sound, comes from Pythagoras, and the weight ton all comes from that as well.
But when I'm talking about a type of an energy or frequency.
Yeah, but that's what the.
But Alan, now maybe this was all a lie. But in a book that I read, Tuning the Human Instrument, and this was written, I think back in the 70s, that they were experimenting in Russia using, let's say, vitamin E. There's a certain energy frequency from of vitamin C, and that they were literally using those frequencies to... how would you say it, not inject, because they're not using needles, But that energy, that frequency that is that vitamin E makes up, that literally people were able to have those vitamins. Am I making any sense? I mean, are you understanding what I'm saying?
I've not quite got the end part.
The what?
The end
well,
part.
In other words, well, why do you say they want you to think mm-hmm. that there's this, that a color has a certain frequency mm-hmm. or a tone has a certain frequency? Mm-hmm.
What Pythagoras did, and remember, he had been trained in Egypt and went back and taught in Crotona, which was a Greek outpost. And he started his own school up, and he, like many afterwards, he recruited young aristocrats who had to pass tests to get in. And they had to also have a vow of silence for the first 3 or 4 years, just like the later Essenes, because that was a later edition of the same mystery religion. And then he selected certain ones to go into the real mysteries, and he also taught females. He gave them a great education, and they became so desirable amongst the nobility. And the females' job was to go out, basically, and help to subtly take over the mind of the nobility that she married, and change their political persuasions and so on. So it was a form of control. Now, for the general population, which they called the profane, the people who were uneducated, they gave out the stories of magic, mysticism. These were real powers in the sky, etc., the constellations and the planets. But for themselves, they used it all as allegories for other things, which was to do primarily with the aspects of their plan for the future and the time clock. That's why George Bush Sr., after he mentioned the New World Order, looked up and he said, "Everything is going to the heavenly plan." He was talking about to the Aquarius, age of Aquarius,
okay.
Where we are now.
Fine, that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It means something to them.
Yeah, it's nothing more than a timepiece for them, because it's been used before.
But they have their windows of opportunity.
Yes,
I've heard them say
it. And they must get through them. But that's why all the early symbols of Christianity was never the cross. You'll always find it inscribed as the fish for the age of Pisces. So,
yes.
So the age of Christ was to take us through the age of Pisces. And that's why it's written, and of course it's tampered with, you know, but it's written that Jesus tells them to go and find a man carrying a pitcher of water, signifying the end of his reign.
The age of Pisces.
That's right. And
yeah.
So Aquarius is the carrier of the water. Now, the water itself is a feminine symbol, so that's when women must rise to the top to be used, not for their own purposes, but to be used by those behind the grand plan. And it's working very successfully, as we see the destruction of everything that was, in order to make way for that which is to come. So this is it's an incredible... You can't really read about it in 5 minutes. You'd have to read and study the Egyptian Book of the Dead. You'd have to study many of the inscriptions that were left by the scribes of Egypt, and cursive, that shorthand which they had, as well as the hieroglyphics. And you compare that with Babylon, what's been dug up there, and their inscriptions. And then you'll find it's the same mystery religion in every empire that ever existed down through time.
And is that where the Kabbalistic...
The Kabbalism literally was taken from Babylon.
Yeah.
It didn't originate in Jerusalem. And
right.
The Kabbalah was added to...
The mysteries.
Yes, uh-huh. That's why it has the 10... fruits on the tree of the tree of life, because at that time when Babylon created the Kabbalah, there were only 10 signs of the zodiac, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very in-depth mystery religion, and you have to study it intensely, understand the different languages, and miss nothing. If you miss anything at all, you can miss the most amazing things.
Well, okay. The Egyptian Book of the Dead.
Yeah.
Is that available in English?
Yeah, you can get translations. Uh-huh.
Are there translations that are real and translations that are lies?
You'll get different translations. You have to go back to either Beresden, who was the initial...
how do you
historian.
Spell that?
B-E-A-R-D. Beard, and S-E-N, I think it is. Yeah. Beardson.
Would that book be available?
It should be through libraries, I don't know.
Libraries. It would just be the Egyptian Book of the Dead?
Yeah.
And do you have a first name for this Beardson guy?
Oh, no, he's always just called Beardson.
Oh, Beardson, okay.
Yeah. And also, you can get E.A. Wallace Budge, who was another translator in the early part of the 1900s.
But let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
Are they the same translation?
They're pretty similar, because you must remember from the hieroglyphs, you're talking from a different language into another language.
Yeah.
You have to often...
substitute words.
You substitute and almost, unfortunately, destroy some of the meanings, or else you use more than just one word to translate one word. You might use a phrase occasionally to try and get the whole meaning of it there. You know?
Well, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read both Beardson and Budge's
yeah.
Egyptian Books of the Dead?
Yeah.
If you were going to recommend one, which one would it be?
Budge is cheaper and it's just as good, really.
E.A. Wallace Budge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Because, you see, I'm still not really following what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying they want us to think mm-hmm. that there's some importance
uh-huh.
to the astrological signs and times and ages,
mm-hmm.
but there really isn't. But they use it for their own plan.
No, they want you to think that there's a magic quality to...
I don't understand. What do you mean, magic quality?
That there's forces or powers you can get from the stars or the planets.
Oh, I wasn't... when I was saying what I was saying, I wasn't talking about forces or powers.
Yeah.
I was talking about influence of the particular planets at mm-hmm. particular times, etc.
Yeah.
And you know that I'm not a fool. I know I've been naive. I know I've come out of a lot of ignorance, and I've got a long way to go. I have had an astrological chart drawn up, and the person that did it did not know me from Adam, and it was me, Alan,
mm-hmm.
the natal chart that was drawn up.
Yeah.
And I had one drawn on the girls, and maybe our listeners are going to think I'm cuckoo and New Age and all that, but... And the reason I did is to, because I saw how very much the chart that was drawn up on me
mm-hmm.
was me. And there are influences that maybe can be helpful, you know, throughout our life. And I don't mean using that to live by. I don't mean that at all. But there is something to it. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what it is to it, but if these guys use it, you know what? We've got to take our break here. And I was supposed to get a hold of Nicholas because people say they cannot hear me when the music is playing.
Okay.
And the music has to be turned down because we waste a whole minute of time. And I'm talking and they can't hear me right now. And I am so sorry I stopped calling today.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
I just, we're back, folks. Nicholas is usually always there when we're doing the broadcast, and I'm so sorry that I didn't call him today. I received a letter from a listener, laid it on the counter right by the phone, and it's been laying there, I can't tell you how long, that said the same thing Jim said last night, is that when the music comes on for our break, it starts out low, but it very quickly goes so high that, and I don't know when I should quit talking, but I'm told that they can't hear anything I'm saying. And Nicholas, if you are listening, please forgive me for not calling you and saying this on the air, but if you can keep that music down, and I know that once it starts, we have a minute, then our listeners can hear what I'm saying before the music overpowers. Thank you, Alan. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't know. Maybe we ought to just get off this subject because it just isn't making sense. What I'm not doing, and it isn't because I don't want to understand. I'm just not understanding what you're saying. They use this, and yet...
They used it for their own plans, time clock, you see. And every symbol and every planet is a symbol of part of their action. Like Mars is the god of war, for instance, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So when that would come into the ascendancy, that means that they would use that time for their war.
Hell.
Yeah, so
the wars have been going on forever.
Oh, I know, but the big ones at certain time, the real big ones,
okay.
Big changes.
You mean, okay.
So that's really what they mean by that.
Mm-hmm. So what is that? So in other words, it isn't a particular... really more effective for them. It isn't more that they can influence people more at that particular time. It's just the time frame that they use.
That's it, yeah.
Okay.
And as I say, they planned it such a long time ago. I don't think it's the first time it's happened. And the Hindus say that we go through these phases, you might say, of birth, living, and then destruction. These are called ages, and of course in the legends of all peoples we have these disaster periods, world disaster periods, floods and earthquakes and so on. And even in Sumer, in the Sumerian tablets, they claimed that prior to their coming into existence, their city, there had been catastrophes on the earth where old continents had sunk and new ones had arisen from the sea.
That they created?
It's possible.
They caused?
It's possible.
That
if we go into the writings of Tacitus, who wrote for Nero, he talked to the Druids in Britain, and they claimed that they had records of three previous ages, maybe 125,000 years apart. And the survivors and the high priests, of course, always the nobility.
They do survive, don't they?
Yeah, they tunnel into mountains and put provisions in to live for long periods. And that tallies with the records of Greece, where their priesthood tunneled into Mount Parnassus and claimed the same thing, that they survived the disasters.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a call. Do you have more you want to say on that, Alan?
Yeah, that also tallies with the story of the Ark, because there's no Ark as such. It's allegory.
Mm-hmm.
But the mountain Ararat that it lies upon is riddled with tunnels.
Ah, there we are. We have a call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're on the air. Who are we talking to?
Yes, good evening, Mrs.
Oh, my, is it Myron?
Yes, it is.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
That's wonderful. Good evening, Mr. Watt.
Good evening.
Good evening, Myron, he said. You can't hear him when you're on the phone, honey.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, go ahead.
Last night I heard you all mention the Passover.
Yes.
I was wondering if Mr. Watt could explain this teaching of the Passover that many ministers teach of out of the Old Testament. And, you know, what is the symbolism or the meaning of this Passover that's really being taught today?
Okay. Good question, Myron.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Give him just a minute to get his radio turned up, Alan.
Yeah.
Okay, the Passover.
Well, that was a fairly recent invention because the historian Josephus, who lived in the first century A.D., claims that the Passover was a fairly new institution, and it hadn't actually grounded itself with any historical past.
But why was it? Wasn't the Old Testament already written then?
I doubt it. I doubt it was all written.
It was the first century A.D.?
Yeah, I don't think the Old Testament was all written at all.
Not all written, but weren't those first five books already put into...
That was the first five books of Moses, yeah.
Yeah,
but
well, the Passover...
There was no, as Josephus said, there was no... it was hazy as to why it had come into existence. It was a festival time, and at some time it had been equated with a festival of lights, which they usually had at these times. But as far as a bloody sacrifice type thing, that wasn't part of it at that time
mm-hmm.
in his day.
Well, Hanukkah, they call their festival of lights.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm reminded of Velikovsky's book. And, you know, you had mentioned him so often.
Yeah.
And Worlds in Collision.
Yeah.
And, oh, my goodness, Alan, his, that book and The Earth in Upheaval,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't put them down when I got started reading. Hold on a sec. But this is another thing. I'm glad Myron brought this up because I was thinking of that because... It doesn't jive with Velikovsky's book,
mm-hmm.
as far as at least that one, Cataclysm, and I think it was supposed to be around 3,600 years ago,
yeah.
when the comet came around and did all the damage and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But he talks in there about what the rabbis actually said about that time,
mm-hmm.
because it wasn't something... the way the story was written in Exodus,
no.
It was a worldwide conflagration.
The Babylonian priests wrote more about it than anybody, because they were the main scientists of their day and astronomers. And after it was over, they were called into Egypt because they had to reset the world calendar The time of the Earth spinning had changed.
Yeah, the sun was even coming up from a different place.
Yeah, and when it settled down...
And they had to find out where the seasons were.
Yeah, that they reset the calendar. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, that what in Velikovsky's book, and the reason I recall it is that I transcribed it into the Section 8 of Jewish Persecution.
Mm-hmm.
He said that... Well, you know, in the Old Testament version in Exodus, that it was, you know, the sun was gone for 3 days and the darkness was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the other side of the earth, historical writings say that the sun stayed in the sky
mm-hmm.
for 3 days.
Yeah.
And the rivers running red with blood. It was happening all over
mm-hmm.
the world because of some... stuff that was coming out of the tail of that comet.
Well, it was raining fire.
Well, they said that too, but the red, Velikovsky mentions this in his book from many different sources,
mm-hmm.
and it was some almost water soluble type of a mineral that may, and it did stink, and it
killed.
It
also burned up the cattle. I mean, it was red hot.
Yeah, okay. And so therefore, these rabbis, and it was... a compendium, I think, of what the rabbis basically said, that the so-called Exodus, people were leaving because they were looking for food, they were looking for water, and that if there were, if they were not Hyksos, if they were whatever his chosen people were, that 49 out of 50 of them died.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just them leaving.
Everybody was running.
Everybody was on the move.
And also the peoples of the sea were coming in from another direction, hoping to get away from it too.
Right, and so therefore, what the Pharisees, scribes, whoever wrote all this,
mm-hmm.
they just took an historical event and wound it into the private little story about the chosen people.
It's a myth.
And that Jehovah brought all these curses down on the Pharaoh's people because Pharaoh wouldn't let his people go.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jehovah hardened his heart.
Well, at that time, Jehovah was more honest because he also played the devil, you see.
Yeah. You know, this sounds a little stupid to me, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but this is supposed to be our loving Creator. And he says, well, I want you to go get my people. You tell the Pharaoh to let him go, but I'm not going to let him. I know he's not going to let him go because I'm going to harden his heart so they won't. And then I'll bring all these plagues down, and I can prove to the world that I'm the Lord God Almighty.
So really, he's playing solitaire with himself.
Yeah. I don't mean to joke about it, because I know to some people this is very hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
But, all we have to do is take a look at it and say, wait a minute. I mean, unless it depends on our concept. Of course, I don't know that any of us have truly the concept of Creator.
Mm-hmm.
But we can know what it isn't, Alan.
Well, that's it. And in the Talmud, they're more upfront with that no one can actually know or figure out the mind of a creator.
Do they actually say that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then who do they say Jehovah was?
Well, that's another deity. I mean, they even have another story of Moses in the Talmud. It's different from the one in the Old Testament.
Do they?
Yeah. Yeah, Moses actually was a full Egyptian. Ra Moses is, you know, means child of Ra.
Son of Ra, yeah.
So he left and he wanted to take over the Pharaoh's job. And he went to Ethiopia and built himself up there, recruited an army, and went to attack Egypt. So it's a whole different story told in the Talmud. You know.
Myron's actual question
mm-hmm.
was, is there a symbology there?
There's astronomical symbology and also agricultural symbology. It's a Passover from death into life for the coming for spring and planting the crops and so on. It's all nature and pantheistic, really, and it's a time for planting and also where seed that symbolizes the death lying through the winter comes to life again, the resurrection.
I see. Like Easter.
That's right, yeah.
Just like Easter, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, that makes sense. All right. Folks, Alan probably gave you his phone number. Have you talked to Myron?
Yes.
Alan, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then he does have your phone number.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In case he has more he wants to ask about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I was looking for whatever I was looking last night, I won't go into it, or yesterday, For anybody who's a Freemason who might be listening or who knows one, I'd like to share, if I may, Alan, this is a part I had forgotten all about.
Yeah.
It's in protocol number 15. Okay, on the second page of it, it says, when we at last definitely come into our kingdom by the aid of coups d'etat, prepared everywhere for one and the same day, after the worthlessness of all existing forms of government has been definitely acknowledged, we shall make it our task to see that against us such things as plots shall no longer exist. Okay. Every kind of new institution of anything, like a secret society, will also be punished with death. those of them which are now in existence are known to us, serve us, and have served us. We shall disband them and send them into exile to continents far removed from Europe, this says. In this way, we shall proceed with those goy masons who know too much. Mm-hmm. Such as these, as we may for some reason spare, will be kept in constant fear of exile. We shall promulgate a law, making all former members of secret societies liable to exile from Europe as the center of our rule. And then over another page, it says, meantime, however, until we come into our kingdom, we shall act in the contrary way. We shall create and multiply Freemasonic lodges in all the countries of the world, absorb into them all who may become or who are prominent in public activity. For in these lodges, we shall find our principal intelligence officers and means of influence. And they literally say that, okay, there's just one more place that I highlighted, I think, leading Masonic, okay, just a sec here. But if there should arise in its midst a plot, just a minute here if I've got it, then at the head of that plot will be no other than one of our most trusted servants. It is natural that we and no other should lead Masonic activities, for we know whither we are leading. We know the final goal of every form of activity, whereas the goyim have knowledge of nothing, not even of the immediate effect of action. They put before themselves usually the momentary reckoning of the satisfaction of their self-opinion in the accomplishment of their thought, without even remarking that the very conception never belonged to their initiative, but to our integration of their thought.
Well, that's true.
This is the last sentence. The goyim enter the lodges out of curiosity or in the hope by their means to get a nibble at the public pie. That's true, isn't it, Alan?
Absolutely.
And some of them in order to obtain a hearing before the public for their impracticable and groundless fantasies. They thirst for the emotion of success and applause, of which we are remarkably generous. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
They suck them in and they stroke them and groom them. And they mention someplace in here that, I mean, it will be the people in high offices,
mm-hmm.
and it will be the judges and the administrators. And you mentioned, I think, last night, the captains, the police. All of them.
Mm-hmm.
And there they are.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, well, we might spare them, some of them, but the others will kill.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's one thing that Masons do allow the public to know through rumor, and that's if you join it, you get unmerited favor and help with your career and promotion and so on.
Right.
They make so you get people who really are almost corrupt anyway, who will join it for those very reasons, you know. And they also tell you that you can bypass petty bureaucracies and get tax reliefs and so on if you join. So that's the bait.
Tax relief.
Yeah.
Alan.
They get different assessments.
These local and county and city officials and mm-hmm. state legislators.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that every time they raise taxes, property taxes, etc., do you think theirs get raised?
No, they don't, and neither do lawyers, because lawyers help with the real estate scams, and so they automatically are exempted from land taxes.
And these people think they're going to be exempt from all the evil they're doing.
Yes, what they don't realize is, you see, most people on this planet at the moment, at this stage that we're at right now, are expendable. And it's coming to the stage where they will, or they'll try and fulfill their promise to wipe out over three quarters of the population. So there's going to be an awful lot of people wiped out, good and bad, if they get their way. And they're ready for it now. We know this because they've been prepping us for years with coming plagues and all this stuff. At the very time when we know that we can splice genes and join anything to anything, even viruses to bacterium, which is the flesh-eating disease. It's the first one in history that was created, two different species joined together. So yeah, they're ready to unleash a lot of stuff on the public.
And these
will not be race specific. These will spread right through the planet.
Not race specific, right? There was an article in a newsletter just recently that said that the scientists somewhere have been given permission to create a mouse with the human brain, Alan.
Yes, they've done more than that. They've done all these. Whenever they tell you they're doing something, this is old stuff. They were doing genetic modifications in the 1920s.
And if the mouse starts acting like a human being, then they're going to make him quit.
Yeah, yeah. But, well, he might become a Christian. He'll be a Christian mouse. Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. There'll be a whole new set of lawyers to deal with all this.
One of the things I don't think that we discussed, and maybe our listeners, a lot of them know about it, but maybe they don't, was that a terrible flu virus that they shipped. Would you talk about that? When you mentioned the plague?
Oh, yeah. Well, in the papers about a week ago, supposedly the CDC had sent out thousands of vials of the 1950s version of the flu to laboratories all over the world, and also one shipment was with the Ebola. Now, I don't know if they really did this or if it's a scare to the public, because it seems like an incredible thing that they do, but certainly it's having the effect on the public of terrifying them and getting them ready for a coming plague.
Well, it'll terrify them if they read the article.
Yes.
But however, I remember the article that I read that somebody had emailed on the internet. They said that most of these had been mailed from the U.S.
Yes.
And their concern is that some of the labs haven't received theirs yet.
Yeah, they said that, in fact, in the last document about it, they said that my goodness, the one that had not been destroyed was in Lebanon. But they were in the process of destroying it. In other words, psychologically, they're attaching it to terrorism.
Sure, not only that, but it'll be a good excuse or justification. Well, what brought it to my mind was when you said the plagues that they are readying.
Yeah.
This could be a prelude to it. You know, this sounds like such a downer. You know, you can't not talk about it, Alan.
You cannot face truth unless you look at the dark side.
I know.
You see, and that's the problem with people. They're egocentric. They've been trained that way. They want to only look at the things that make them feel good. And because of that, they're wide open to whatever is going to happen. And that is a choice, because maturity takes a person, and truly seeking truth takes a person to look at all sides of everything. And you must be prepared to look at the black, the blackest black you've ever looked at.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's void, interesting, you know? Yes. That was in the chapter of The Family of Dark, which I shared with our listeners a few weeks ago.
Yep.
And that's what it said, is that in order truly to be in light, if you would, enlightened or aware, you have to know the depths of the evil, the darkness.
You must, we've got to get out of this Disney world where people are really responsible at the top, and they're there and because there's good and decent and just people. That the opposite is true. The corrupt people are at the top, and it's only the corrupt people who can get to the top in this particular system we live in.
And so before we go off the air tonight, because we won't be back till Monday, a thought that occurs to me that I'd like to share with our listeners is, in knowing this, it doesn't mean that we have to dwell on it every moment of our life, folks. We share the information with those who want to know, and there are times, there are precious moments, and those precious moments are times that we spend with our loved ones, with our children, with our friends, times of being quiet and seeking a self-awareness. Those are we do, in other words, we don't have to swim in this sea of darkness. That's what I'm trying to say, Alan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because I wouldn't be able to live. I wouldn't be able
most
to.
Most people couldn't. And that's what I say. Those who think that they can't face it shouldn't even look at it.
No, I'm not.
They should continue the way they are and what makes them happy.
Well,
but those who are looking for truth have no option but to look at the dark side.
Yes, I understand. But do you understand what I just said?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That we don't have to swim in it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we know it. It's there.
Yeah.
And once we know it, we cannot unknow it.
Mm-hmm.
But in other words, if it is all we dwell in,
mm-hmm.
Well, maybe I'm only speaking for myself, it would be unbearable.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to say that because there are precious moments. And there are times, even when you say some silly thing to lighten up the conversation.
Yeah.
In a sense, that's a precious moment.
Sure.
Okay, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to leave the broadcast tonight
mm-hmm.
On a note of hopelessness, helplessness,
mm-hmm.
evil, darkness, because it isn't all evil and dark. Like you said, there are good people.
There are good
and
people.
There is love in this world, and really it all begins with us.
It begins with the individuals who must look at everything and who have gone through the darkness and come out again. And they know that it's evil, and they know that they must fight it. You see? It's not an occasional fight. You know you're going to fight this thing with everything you've got.
Yes, exactly. We're out of our hour tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, thank you so much.
Yes,
and ladies, yes, ladies and gentlemen, we will be back with you Monday. And thank you for being here. And Creator, bless you all. Good night. Night, Alan.
Good night.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
I think that he gave us our 1 minute notice.
You got 4 minutes.
Well, I just heard.
It's 3 minutes too.
Okay, well, I do hear the music.
Uh-huh.
And we are at the end of our hour. We actually don't go right up to the top of the hour.
Oh, okay.
Because they get a minute for their... Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you Monday.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at firstamendmentradio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $20.